Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI says the Church has a message of hope that it wants to proclaim to all of humanity. Participants at the ongoing Synod for Africa talk about the hopes and expectations of those back home. And film critic Peter Malone talks about an African film that looks like science fiction, but is really about discrimination. Pope Benedict XVI says the Church has a message of hope that it wants to proclaim to all of humanity. The Pope reflected on this message on Sunday before praying the midday Angelus with those gathered in St. Peter's Square. His address also marked World Mission Sunday, and the Pope called the occasion a powerful reminder for every ecclesial community and for each Christian of the duty to proclaim and bear witness before all people to the Gospel, especially to those who do not yet know it. Lydia O'Kane has this report.
Pope Benedict, during his Angelus address in St. Peter's Square yesterday, marked Mission Sunday by remembering all those who give their lives to spread the Gospel. On this Mission Sunday, thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square from around the world to hear Pope Benedict speak about a day which he said is a strong call to proclaim and bear witness to the Gospel.
On the World Mission Sunday, let us turn to him in prayer and approach his throne of grace so that we may receive his mercy and proclaim the Gospel of love throughout the world.
The Holy Father referred back to his message written for the occasion, saying he was inspired by an expression from the book of Revelation, "The nations will walk by its light." The light, he explained, is that of God, revealed by the Messiah and reflected on the face of the Church, represented as the New Jerusalem, a wonderful city where the full glory of God is resplendent. He added that it is the light of the Gospel that guides people towards the realization of one great family in justice and peace under the fatherhood of one good and merciful God.
Voglio ricordare i missionari e le missionarie, sacerdoti religiosi e religiose e laici volontari.
This Mission Sunday was a day for Pope Benedict to remember those who give their lives every day, such as priests, religious and lay volunteers, all in the name of spreading the Gospel, some of whom face, as he put it, hardships, difficulties and sometimes real persecution. The Pope's thoughts in particular were with missionaries such as Don Roger Rivoletto, a Fide Donum priest recently killed in Brazil. He also recalled Father Michael Sinnott, an Irish Columban missionary kidnapped some days ago in the Philippines and of whom nothing has been heard despite appeals.
Penso tra gli altri a Don Ruggero Ruvoletto, sacerdote Fidei Donum, recentemente ucciso in Brasile, al padre Michael Sinnott, religioso, sequestrato pochi giorni fa nelle Filippine.
Pope Benedict also had a word of thanks for the Pontifical Missions for its valuable service, and he made an appeal to all Christians to share in material and spiritual help for young churches in the world's poorest countries. The Pope's thoughts then turned to the Synod of African Bishops, which is currently taking place here in the Vatican. How can I not but think of what is emerging from the Synod of Bishops for Africa in terms of ultimate sacrifice and love for Christ and his Church, he said, before asking those present in St. Peter's Square to pray for the special assembly. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. Today I'm going to take up from where I left off last week. The Synod for Africa has been going for 14 days now, and participants are preparing to wrap it all up next Sunday. And as I told you last Monday, I have really been trying to make the most of the Synodal Fathers and of all the other participants too. I do that by popping down to the Synod Hall almost every day, and during their 10:30 coffee break, go up to them, introduce myself, and interview them, notwithstanding an inevitable background din of clinking coffee cups and conversation. 2 weeks ago, I asked them for their opinions regarding the role of the media in Africa. Last week, my question had to do with their expectations regarding this synod and what they hope it will produce.
How hopeful are you that the synod papers will actually have an effect once the synod is over and done?
I think, you know, after the first African synod, we probably had unrealistic expectations that great things would start happening immediately.
Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier is the Bishop of Durban in South Africa, and he's also one of the delegate presidents of the synod.
But what has happened is, it's taken 15 years, and in some places, at the end of those 15 years, people are only now starting to realize why it is important to have a justice and peace commission in a diocese or even in a parish. It isn't about political injustice, it's about all other kinds of injustice and reorganizing society so there are no people who are disadvantaged that should be all on a par, given a fair chance. And I think those who were here for the previous one, those who have been in the process of trying to implement the previous synod, will be more realistic in saying, well, we know reconciliation is something very difficult. It's like, how would I say, trying to catch a shadow, because how do you reconcile people when they're at either end of a spectrum? And yet, I think what happens at a synod is a certain atmosphere, a certain spirit is planted in the hearts of people, which makes us realize, hey, we don't belong on the outside. We should be on the inside helping people find reconciliation, even if it's in the political field. The church must go in there, not because we want people to do things the way the church wants, but to see the things that are common to us, and the church is simply there as a catalyst to get them going.
So, a certain spirit is planted in the hearts of people during a synod such as this, says Cardinal Napier, as we strive to help people find reconciliation. Now, I don't think I've said as much so far, but reconciliation, together with justice and peace, are the main themes of this synod. And as Cardinal Napier, who's so creative with words and images, says, the Synodal Fathers are not here to catch a shadow, but to find common ground upon which to build. And that is definitely something I heard from others as well.
What do you expect from this synod?
I would hope that we will go back with a new sense of energy and enthusiasm.
Father Robert Patrick Ellison is the Bishop of Banjul in the Gambia.
It hasn't been easy for our local Catholics, say, to see things as we might see them here. You know, when you're talking with people who are leaders and like-minded, exactly, that's the word, and you go back to your own diocese, it's very hard to communicate the spirit of hope and the needs as we discuss them here. So that is the most important thing that I would have to do as head of the church, to be able to communicate the fact that, yes, a lot of good has been done. Here are the areas where we must get up and go a little bit harder. As I said, the area of self-reliance, the area of perhaps even a little bit more commitment to the various, particularly to the poor and the needy in our diocese.
Another thing I have probably neglected to say so far is that, as well as the over 200 bishops who are participating in this synod, there's also a fair number of auditors and experts, men and women, involved in giving their contribution. Sister Cecilia Mkhonto, the General Superior of the Sisters of St. Bridget in South Africa, told me She is hoping for more collaboration between different members of the church, as well as raising the voice of Africa within the Universal Church.
What do you hope might come out of this synod?
We are hoping that we become more of a universal church, and Africa has a voice in the universal church. And on top of that, that we don't do our own thing, but we will align with Rome in whatever we are doing. And also the collaboration between the bishop and the major superiors, and then it filters down out to the grassroots where the people are working. And the involvement of lay people is counting a lot.
Another interesting woman I met was Sister Liliane Sueco of the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur. She's currently in Rome but has spent 7 years working in one of Africa's most ravaged nations, Zimbabwe. As is true for all those who work in Zimbabwe, she demanded respect for the people there and for her sisters who could find themselves in danger should she reveal anything the president of that country and his men may not want to be said.
Do you think that a gathering such as this will really bear some fruit as far as the concerns of real Africans go?
I believe, because God is working and we need to make known our voice. We need to make known our voice because it's the work of the Spirit, and the Spirit works through people. As we are here as a family of God, we believe, we know that we are going through a lot of suffering in Africa, but many good things also are happening, and we can contribute a lot in Africa.
Tell me about the good things.
Good things, but we have many values, for example, that we can say, and we can share with the world, we can share with the church. A such synod can be very fruitful to make known our voice, and many people are hearing what we are saying at this particular moment in our history.
So the need to make known the voice of Africa is paramount here in the Synod Hall right now. Cameroonian Bishop Jean Mbarga confirmed to me that this is true.
To a meeting like this is important to bring all the voices together, right?
Yes, this one, the Synod, is has a great capacity of information first. To listen all this representation is very rich. And after that, we are looking for new strategies to improve our capacity to help the Africa, to help the society in Africa. And I think that at the ecclesial level, we have also this specific capacity to open the problem of Africa to the whole world. That is the universal aspect, which is very important. It's not only the problem by Africans to the Africans, it's now the problem of the world and the humanity, all the humanity.
Yes, it's a chance to bring news of the reality, the many realities of Africa, both good and bad, to the rest of the world. As Bishop Mbarga says, to the whole of humanity. But it also works the other way. As Bishop George Biguzzi of Sierra Leone told me, Africans back home are also awaiting for news.
What do the people of Africa want to hear coming out of this synod, in your mind?
Well, I believe that the Instrumentum Laboris already sets the goal. They want to hear, of course, people are looking for liberation from the troubles, for healing, again for greater justice, freedom from oppression, and also the all terrible wars of different types, so that people have to keep running here and there as refugees without security. So there are a lot of things actually the people expect. They know that the church doesn't have the magic wand, to solve everything, and that a lot of things actually are responsibility of governments. Our responsibility as pastors is to be, as you say, well, prophetic, to bring the word of God and on the actual situation, inspire people, give direction, service. Well, the church has been doing this from the beginning, our involvement in spreading the word of God, the dignity of the human being, and then all the social services that the church runs throughout the continent, in education, health, development, all sorts. So people look to the church, at least to lead in the way of development, of freedom, and reconciliation. So the expectations are many. We know that we are not God, we are God's servants, and I believe that with God's help, with the Holy Spirit, we can really do a lot moving forward to reconcile the people, to have a more just society and a peaceful coexistence.
In his comprehensive answer there, Bishop Biguzzi touched on the issue regarding the responsibilities and the challenges of leadership. This is an issue that the Archbishop of Johannesburg and President of the Bishops Conference of Southern Africa, Father Buti Tlagale, spoke to me about at length. Actually, very courteously, upon my invitation, he came to the radio himself for a quiet chat away from the din of coffee cups and background conversation. What is your hope that the synod may create, or you're going to go back to South Africa? What do you think the people in South Africa want to hear from you?
I guess we're probably at slightly different expectations. My expectation of the synod is that we will speak in one voice, be a visible leadership across boundaries. Select one or two or three things we want to put up a fight about and do it and seek to achieve results. That's what I would like to see happen. I would like to see a committed leadership, a collective leadership, an accountable leadership.
You said something interesting. You said the unpleasant challenges of leadership, you called it.
Unpleasant in the sense that most, when these things come up, when we fear reaction from the people we criticize and we want to back away. And also, if you take, for example, the example of Pius Ngobe, look what has happened to him. It could happen to any of us.
You may or may not remember, but Pius Nkupe, the former Archbishop of Bulawayo in Zimbabwe, was widely known for his human rights advocacy and for being an outspoken critic of Zimbabwe's president. He was quite clearly framed and forced to resign in 2007 after calling for a peaceful rebellion to bring democratic change to his suffering nation.
So when we challenge the political leadership with all the might they have, they might actually turn around and make your life impossible. So by virtue of being in a position of leadership, you have access to a certain level of support of the people by virtue of that position of responsibility. But people also expect you to take certain risks. And it is those risks that I'm referring to, that they can be very unpleasant, some of those challenges. And we have to be stand up and be counted. If we did that together, obviously in our situation at times we have to do that as individuals where we are concretely, but as a country, for example, we've got to do that as a collective, so too across the region. I mean, if you look at SADC, mm-hmm. the political level, mm-hmm. we've got SADC, and then we've got the AU at a continental level. Even politicians feel the need of working together at those levels, so too the church. You know, we've got to work together. If we succeed in doing that, in having a common commitment, then we will be able to produce results. We won't just make claims. We'll be able to follow through on the promises we make to the people we serve. Our job is simply to serve communities. And if they feel oppressed, deprived, we've got to speak on their behalf. And if we do that without fear, without favor, then we will be doing our job. So I think in many ways the expectations are that since you claim to be leaders or we've put in position of responsibility, behave like leaders and help us, help alleviate the pain, the poverty, the stress of the people. That's what we're called to do.
Yes, if all those in positions of leadership accept the challenge and really behave like leaders, if they all follow through on the promises they make to the people they serve, as Bhuti says, without fear and without favour, a big step is sure to be made in the alleviation of the pain and of the poverty of all African people. Finally, after a rather long break, I have linked up again with my friend Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Kind of staying in theme with the rest of the programme, today he told me about a recently released South African film. It looks like science fiction, but it really goes much deeper than that and touches on the raw nerve that is racial discrimination.
We're on to a series of films that aren't really my genre, but we're talking about the futuristic films, District 9, Pandorum and Surrogates.
I thought you were going to say that. I was wondering whether you'd rushed off to see any of them, especially District 9.
I'm very interested in District 9, yes.
So that's a matter of heritage and loyalties rather than interest in futuristic films.
Well, let's start with District 9 then. As you say, it's a South African film. I think that District 9 might be a reference to District 6, the sadly famous district in Cape Town where the coloureds were kept segregated.
I would say so, yes. There are all kinds of parallels with the aliens who are there. But it's set in Johannesburg, in fact.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the story, what happens?
I'm going to tell you first, it's made an enormous amount of money in America and all around the world. It's one of the hits of this year. So it's quite unpredictable that, something with a big budget like Surrogates, which we'll mention later with Bruce Willis, has done very meagre business, and yet people have flocked to District 9. So it made me wonder what it is about interest in futuristic films.
And what is your conclusion?
Well, this one is really intriguing because it has a spaceship parked over the city of Johannesburg for several decades. And the aliens who have found themselves on Earth have been rounded up in a kind of, as you'd guess, apartheid situation. And so the treatment of the aliens by the people of Johannesburg, both black and white, is very prejudiced.
Nobody comes back late at night anymore. They have more security.
The government noticed that they were moving into new areas. That's when things started to get out of hand.
They don't belong here.
They're spending so much money to keep them here when they could be spending it on other things. At least they're keeping them separate from us.
A lot of bad things started to happen.
They must just go. I don't know where they go. And they must just go.
We're at the breaking point. People are living in fear.
And there's an interest in some, for scientific experimentation. The aliens have become very weak over the decades. Some would like to escape. And in fact, some are planning an escape if they can get the technology ready. And a police inspector finds himself infected by whatever is ailing them. And he then is pursued as an alien, so he has to experience what they are experiencing.
Why are you here? Why don't you just leave? How do your weapons work?
Oh.
So in a sense, it's social comment in a futuristic setting.
But are these aliens actually threatening to the society, or are they just perceived as such?
They're perceived as such, and they were rounded up very early and taken away. In fact, at one stage early in the film, there are big plans for moving them even further away from Johannesburg so that they wouldn't be seen by society.
So, should we recommend it? Not for children.
Not for children, but
a lot of violence, I think, in the film.
Yes, but I was going to say reasonable violence, but I don't know how that sounds. But violence that fits, I suppose, this kind of story, because it is about violence, no matter what is depicted, and with the echoes of the past in South Africa, it's very strong.
I just want everyone watching this right now to learn from what has happened.
So anybody who finds that kind of thing intriguing, I'm sure will find it a very interesting film.
Is there any kind of reconciliation experience towards the end of the film?
Hopes more than actuality.
Okay.
Yes, it's as with a lot of the films about the future, there isn't always a lot of hope unless they come from Hollywood.
You're absolutely right there.
Yes.
Hollywood isn't very, very realistic, maybe.
No, well, Americans do prefer to have possible happy endings and hope. People from Europe tend to say, well, you know, we can be grim about things, and that's existential reality.
That was Peter Malone, head of the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.